business is business, can't leave no witness. Yo, so y'all see, it's a collaboration today. This is the Power Level Podcast, and it's the Grind for More special podcast. Man, go ahead, let them know, Ryan J.
Hey, this is Ryan J, the host of the Business is Business Podcast, also a member of Grind for More.
Dope, man. We have a very special guest here today. He's been wanting to talk about the issues for a while live, so he has been making sure he's been talking about the issues, not just live today, but also throughout this whole entire protest. He is an Army veteran, and he's also a knife maker too, and he has his own business. Y'all give a big round of applause for James Fleming today.
How's it going?
Man, thank you for coming in, James, man. You are really one of the reasons that we really want to highlight and showcase people like you that are saying that, hey, I am white, but it's okay. I'm trying to also understand, and I'm also trying to make sure that I keep my foot on the gas and let people know that this racism needs to stop for the future. So, James, what was some of your motivation of wanting to do this talk?
Well, I mean, as you know, like I've known you since, man, probably kindergarten. I've at least known you, and I've known Ryan for, you know, maybe third grade on. And I grew up in Leesville, Louisiana with you guys. And, you know, one of our topics is diversity. Like I started in a school that had a diverse background, and the majority of my friends were black people. Mm-hmm. So I just didn't understand. Like back then, you know, you don't see racism as a child. You don't. You just hang out with who you hang out with. It doesn't matter the color of skin. It doesn't matter where they're from, the backgrounds or anything. You hang out with the people that you hang out with. That's just how it rolls. And as adults, I don't see how like that's something that completely changes.
That's a good point.
You just like I can't imagine myself putting myself on a pedestal above any other person.
And wow.
Yeah, and it just like, I mean, we're all fighting for our own lives and trying to make our own existence for ourselves and our families. And so when I see people who believe that another person is lesser, it's like, no, they're doing all the same things they can to get ahead too. It doesn't matter where they're from or anything like that. You know, the same thing with immigrants coming into this country. Like I believe in open borders. You know, we have an open border system with commerce, but we don't have an open border system with refugees and stuff like that. That doesn't make any sense to me.
So one of the also things that you did point out, you know, that you've been knowing us for a while, and we are all from, in a sense, you know, Louisiana originally. So can y'all want to speak on that, pretty much how growing up as far as Leesville, Louisiana, how it was, why, and how it was a diverse town?
So I guess I'll start off. I know it's next to a military town, which is Fort Polk, so you have two levels of diversity. You have that military background of people coming in from all over the world. And when I say all over the world, like people from Africa join the military and the United States to gain citizenship. And, you know, people from Puerto Rico, Puerto Rican's United States territory, Guam, you know, the Virgin Islands, we have people who aren't technically classified as U.S. citizens in this adjacent town where those kids are going to school with us. But not only did we have, you know, like a cultural mix, but we also had a diversity going to school. You know, like, and that's one thing that's great about growing up in that town, especially in the South, because, you know, we all went to school at the same places. You know, we went to Leesville Elementary School together. What was the middle school's name?
Vernon Middle.
Was it Vernon Middle, and yeah. then we went to junior high together, and then I got held back in seventh grade, so you guys both went ahead. And then that's after I moved shortly after that. But so growing up in into my teen years in a diverse school where, you know, I may have been one of a couple hundred white people mixed in with this huge mix of cultures, backgrounds, and ethnicities.
Yeah, that's very true. I think that's kind of comes the same way I kind of looked at it, as it really was kind of like an open melting pot as far as living in Leesville, being so close to a military base, and how we met so many different people. But at the same sense, I think, you know, I did know about racism. You know, there were, you know, different instances that I did have, you know, growing up. So, like, Brian, like, as far as you know, growing up, because I know me, because me and James were friends. I had a lot of other friends. I feel like I was always a friend that I didn't care about color or whatever, you know, and I feel like Ryan was the same way. So what was your take on Ryan growing up in Leesville?
So the interesting thing about my background is my dad was military. So I was born on Fort Polk. I was born a military brat. Mm-hmm. And then my dad got out of the military. And we ended up staying in Leesville. So for my first 4 or 5 years, I was actually going to school on post. Like James said, it was a diverse group because it's the military. The military brings everyone together. So then when I went to Leesville, still the same dynamic. You still have diversity, but there was a difference. And this is where that difference comes in. So what you have to mentally think about is this is a Louisiana town. Mm-hmm. And Leesville, I will give Leesville its credit. It's very diverse. But we literally have surrounding schools to have graduating classes of five. Mm-hmm. Now, what you have to take in consideration is majority of the times you combine those schools and you bring everyone together. If you live 10 miles out, 15 miles out, Vernon and a lot of towns in Louisiana, we're still segregated in our own special way. You have Leesville, which is a multicultural, diverse school. Mm-hmm. And then you have maybe seven other towns that are predominantly white.
Very true.
And that should tell you something in 2020. It's not because it's a quicker commute. It's because a lot of schools just don't want to blend. A lot of areas don't want to blend. So that should tell you a lot about how going to Leesville gave us an upper hand as far as dealing with others and other races. I had the opportunity, like we discussed, James said, I had the opportunity to know people like James, Chris Dolly. Chris Dolly has been one of my closest friends since second grade. Just even a little backstory with Chris Dolly, me and Chris actually got close is because I remember I used to get picked on in elementary. Chris came to my rescue in second grade and stopped another white kid from picking on me. And ever since that day, I was like, this is my guy right here. So seeing race, like, you know, there's a difference, but you judge someone by their character and by what they do. And that's the opportunity I was given at Leesville. A lot of these areas back at home, they don't have that same test. So you take in consideration, the only time I come into this town, Leesville, which is very diverse, is to go shopping. I'm going to interact with cultures that I've never interacted with on a daily basis. It's interesting, and I'm seeing that right now in the conversations that we're having with other people.
Very
talk true. About race, you see the ignorance in their comments, and it's like, man, have you been under a rock? Have you been living under a rock?
And that's the answer is yes. Been saying to that too. She's like, you know, because some people were pretty much saying, like, you know, and this guy, he pretty much admitted, he said, I've been living in a bubble. So, you know, they really look at it and say, this is only the only thing that I know. But again, I applaud those people that admit that.
Yes.
And actually want to learn. Because, like, okay, that's okay. You've been living in a bubble. Now, here is the world. Now, don't get overwhelmed, I guess, but, you know, try to take one step by step and actually learn what is going on and say, oh, you know what? This ain't the world. This isn't my bubble. So this, you know, this isn't what it should be. I know I heard John Stewart say on an interview that was really good, talking about his experiences with the police. And he was saying, my experience isn't actually the experience. And I feel like that's kind of happening a lot when people were pretty much kind of saying about, you know, how we are reacting to things, saying we maybe are sensitive or saying these things are going on and they're thinking that this is the experience. Like, no, everybody, they pretty much are not believing in systematic racism, because in a sense, that's kind of like what you're saying as far as the smaller towns, in a sense.
Yeah. It's
systematic, and then, you know, deeper rooted is the systemic too. But so pretty much you say, yeah, you know, and even though you might not have seen these things occur, you might not understand these things inside your bubble. No, but this is actually what is happening and what's going reality. On.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. Now, I want to kind of talk on the difference between systemic and systematic for a second, one. If you don't mind. Yeah. So a lot of people don't understand that there are actually two different things. When people think of systematic racism, they think, you know, okay, it's obvious. Systematic is obvious racism. It is, okay, this corporationally or this company openly will not serve Black people or openly will not serve Arab or Sheikhs or something like that. That is systematic racism. That is them choosing to be openly racist. Systemic racism is a governance towards the oppression of people of color. You see that in the 13th Amendment, where in the amendment, it's in fine lines, basically, where they say, okay, Black people are free unless you get arrested. And what do we have going on today?
Prison system.
Yeah, our population in the prison system is overwhelmingly Black. Our arrest records is for Black people are overwhelmingly geared towards arresting Black people versus white people. And so that is systemic racism. When your society is geared towards using racist means to oppress people, it is a lot less obvious. And that's what a lot of white people aren't wrapping their head around, because it's not happening to them. The systematic racism they can see, but the systemic racism isn't happening. I get pulled over and I get a warning or a ticket, you know, and I don't fear myself in the way that Black people in our nation have to fear for themselves when they get pulled over by a cop.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point, James, because I was I had posted a question on my Facebook. I made a status and I said, what is it about Black Lives Matter that is so offensive? And in those responses, I had one of our classmates from high school respond back, Jordan Eastridge, and he used to be a cop and now he's a teacher. And he gave a very insightful answer. And that's one thing about me. I'm very receptive to what people have to say, even if it's not my opinion. He had put out a point and he said, what we have to understand is being a police, it's almost a numbers game. And they have to do a job, which is a numbers game. And when he said it, he was basically just not necessarily defending the police, but he was giving an explanation. And when I read that, I thought about it and I sent him a response back and I appreciated him for his comment. The police in this country can't see Americans as numbers.
No,
you can't see Americans and especially Black people, because prisons have quotas and numbers that they have to meet.
They have to maintain a population.
They have to maintain a population. And the easiest target is the Black community. It's not because Blacks are just committing more crimes. It's because Blacks are more accessible to these crimes in their areas that they live in. Your education is low. The neighborhood and the community is low. It's poverty stricken. So, yeah, let's put cops out there and patrol, because the question that I don't think is answered is, if you police more in a community, shouldn't that cut down on crime? Are they allowing these crimes to happen just so they can fill these numbers? Because I'm not going to commit a crime if I see a cop sitting right on the corner. So these questions have to be asked. Go ahead, James.
Most crimes, let's say nonviolent crimes, let's say victimless crimes, those are designed to slap somebody with arbitrary laws to charge them with a crime that has no merit in reality. Like cops can stop you, detain you, and charge you with the only charge being resisting arrest after they try to arrest you. You can be arrested, and your single only charge can be resisting arrest. That is completely, in my opinion, illegal. Like, how can you arrest somebody for committing zero crimes and then they get charged with resisting arrest? It's geared, and resisting arrest, I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure it's a misdemeanor, but if you resist arrest, you know, like, one, now you're labeled as a criminal, whether or not it's a misdemeanor. And so that's going on your record every time. And say you resist arrest again in the future, resist arrest. Now it jumps up to a felony. You know, like, it's these laws that govern people that are, these are racist laws. They are designed just to oppress people.
Very true. And even kind of what you were touching on in the beginning too, as far as the 13th Amendment, and I kind of talked about it on one of our last lives about how pretty much after that they made another set of laws pretty much again to go with the prison system, and as far as with the African-American community, to where they couldn't do certain things or they would get pretty much arrested for anything. And that was kind of like one of the foundations of law enforcement, to where I think one of the silly laws that they had were they couldn't actually preach without a license or whatever. They mm-hmm. couldn't preach to a congregation. They couldn't do these certain different things. And again, also with that, they made sure they paid the people that that didn't benefit from them ending slavery. So pretty much they gave them money for slavery. And then also they made sure they arrested these people and then hired them to do slave labor again. You know, so that was.
Yeah. I know that, I think you're talking about the Jim Crow laws. In those, they just rename them every single time. They, you know, they do away with them. The Jim Crow laws don't exist anymore, but they substitute something else in there. And it's like, so when I was going to college in Texas, like, we had to learn about, you know, Texas history and Texas government, and the topic of Jim Crow laws came up, and it's like, okay, well, once these were abolished, this is what replaced them. And there's still, you know, counties and sheriffhoods who establish these laws that still to these days are Jim Crow laws, just, you know, with a different name.
Hmm. That's very true. And I know one of the things, one of the books that people have been kind of saying, trying to read, is the new Jim Crow laws, where you kind of really can understand again what's going on with that systemic racism. So I want to read the comments too again. Raphael David Beeson, he says, it's funny how the open borders debate has shifted over time. Liberation economists like Milton, who conservative love, were big supporters of free flow labor. Queen Cole, she definitely agreed with James, what he said earlier. I think that's when you were breaking down systemic and systematic racism. Queen Cole also says to maintain the money. I believe that was Ryan's point. Raphael also said mandatory minimums have been used to get high conviction rates without needing to go to trial, which helps the DA make a career targeting poor people who don't have access to good lawyers and threatening them with heavy time unless they just plead out. Mm-hmm. And Ryan, again, because I think it broke up a little bit for me on my end. What was his answer again? I know he said it was a numbers game after that, but what was his initial answer to why Black Lives Matter was offensive to him? I didn't catch that.
Oh, okay. So I didn't cover his reason for why he thought Black Lives Matter was offensive. There wasn't anything in particular that he said that, oh, well, the wording or the prioritizing of the blacks. His only issue was he didn't like how, like, monuments and different things were being spray painted with Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
Which, you know what? I can understand that. I'm not even going to fight with people on that. When it comes down to it, history is history, but we need to put history. There's a time and place for everything. We need to put history in places where it belongs.
Yeah.
There are Nazi and Hitler museums that if that's something you believe in, you can go to the museum and look at it. That's fine. I mean, that's what makes America so great, that you have that free will and that freedom of choice to go praise and worship anything that you want. But it shouldn't be at the steps of your state capitol. Mm. It shouldn't be a representation of what your capital and your state is all about. And just to go along to what we were just talking about with the prison system, it's funny. We didn't even have this system until slavery ended. If you want to talk about timing, it was almost like they said, okay, guys, we got to free the slaves. Aha, but I got an idea. Let's start building these prisons and put them in there for breaking laws. And like y'all said, it was little petty laws like loitering. You freed slaves, didn't give them a dime. So where are they going to stay? Where are they going to live? So a lot of slaves, well, free black people, were arrested for being homeless. So you put them in the jail system. And then we talk about a system because we've been going back and forth. And let me make sure this isn't something we're covering. OK, so we've been going back and forth on defunding the police and police brutality. And people are acting like this is something that we're reacting about just from what we've seen in the news today. Or this is something that's been recently happening. But when you have to keep in mind that you can go back and look at an old badge and a slave catcher were the original names, and then they changed it to a sheriff. Mm-hmm. You can't tell me that this isn't a system that was created to lock up black people when your history says that it's a system created to lock up black people.
The funny thing about most of these monuments is they weren't created after the war. They weren't created until, I just looked it up because I've read about it, 1890s and 1950s, which match up with the Jim Crow era laws and the abolishment of Jim Crow. So they use these monuments as a sign of oppression. There's no reason why we should have any Confederate monuments, you know, years and years after the war ended. I could understand if, like, you know, they erected them in remembrance of the soldiers right after the war, because that's how monuments are usually erected. You know, like they were just like, all right, these soldiers fought in this war, let's erect this monument. But no, like you want a monument of General Lee for what? Like it's been years. Like, why are you erecting this? Oh, Jim Crow laws. You know, it's a sign of oppression. Like none of these monuments actually have anything to do with history. All they have to do is with oppression.
And it's insane too, like as far as, you know, how white supremacy uses, you know, those statues and also those images and different things, you know, subliminally, because I think a lot of people were still kind of going back and forth with the whole Aunt Jemima thing and this and that, but they really don't understand how these images were used to degrade us, you know, subliminally, though, so psychologically how it affect us. I mean, they even had like a study a long time ago. They were showing like black children, they started to pretty much identify with being black as a bad thing because what they see throughout the media. So people say, oh, it's just syrup. Like, no, these are more different things. So when they're putting up these statues, that's them showing their supremacy. Like, yeah, they did this, but, you know, and we have a lot of great black people out through history, but okay, they give us Martin Luther King. Okay, that's cool. They put his street into the hood and they put him into the worst areas, but they don't want to give all the other great inventors and great people that we have in history. Like, I don't think people really kind of understand that. I'm going to read another comment too. D-Lib Lipton says, I spent a lot of time in Germany. There aren't any Nazis monuments or flags because it forces them to live in the past.
That's a big thing too.
So of course we can still get in touch on that too. Y'all can still do y'all comments if y'all want, but I also want, since D-Lib kind of spoke about the military. Now, James, you were telling me about some instances with you in the military. Just give a little people some of your background, some of the things that you went through in the military, and some of the things that you kind of learned through diversity in the military.
So, I mean, like I was saying earlier, the military is a melting pot of cultures and just backgrounds in general. I went to Fort Knox, Kentucky for basic training. And at basic training in Kentucky, there's a town adjacent to it. I don't remember the name of the town, but it is a very racist area. The town right next to Fort Knox, Kentucky, is the birthplace of the KKK. So any time we would get leave or anything like that, which didn't really happen in basic, but I did end up back at Fort Knox, Kentucky. they would give you weekend briefs if you were going to travel. And they would tell, they would basically, without, you know, singling black people out, they would tell black people not to go in these areas because of the racism and because of the KKK. So I went from basic training. I had 2 weeks back in Texas, and then I went to South Korea. And so, I mean, like, talk about a culture clash, like being a soldier in South Korea and experiencing the culture there. One, they're very, it's a very westernized culture. Like they follow a lot of stuff that goes on in the United States, fashion and all of that stuff. But the way they show respect to their elders and to stuff like that, it's great. Like it is a system of respect. It isn't like, oh, you should just respect your elders. No, like on the subways, there are seats designated just for the elderly. There is things you say when greeting elderly, and just stuff like that. And so that was nice. But the leadership is what stood apart to me when I was in Korea. There were a couple NCOs that were in my company, Sergeant Dorge and Sergeant Petia in particular. They gave me kind of like an education on some things that, you know, I think that should be just kind of taught in general in the military, but isn't, you know, like all black units in the military. Before I went to Korea, I never knew about any of these. And I mean, like, obviously everybody knows about the Buffalo Soldiers, but that's one of, I think there's, let me try to count real quick. There's like 15 all black units that have served throughout the military. Wow. All black. Yeah. And the one that they informed me about, because I was a tanker in the Army, was the 761st Tank Battalion. And they were members of the order. Like there's like honors that you can gain while being in the military and being a part of that order. And it's to pay homage to that unit that served before them as tankers. So like so they informed me about that. And these two NCOs, the reason why they stand out to me in particular is because I think me becoming an NCO in the Army is because of the influence they had on me. I gained sergeant in 2 years in the Army. It generally takes people 3 to 5 years. I was a corporal after a year and a half teaching, when I came back to Fort Knox, teaching soldiers. And some of the things they told me was what influenced my drive to become a leader and become a good leader in the military. You know, like they told me, you know, as the younger generation coming up, it is our Army. So like there was that, and they informed me, you know, you aren't a leader just because you're in that position. You can have stripes on your arm all day, but you're not going to lead soldiers. They're not going to follow you if you're not a leader. And they led by example. My first gunnery, I shot. So I'll give a background on gunneries. Gunneries are like proficiency tests for like tankers. So you have qualifying rounds, and you have to shoot a certain amount out of 1,000 points in order for your tank to qualify as a crew. To actually operate a tank, you need at least 700 points to qualify as a tank crew. My first gunnery, I shot alongside Sergeant Dorch and Sergeant Petia. And that was an honor to me because they, for one, like I really looked up to them, and two, they were cheering me on. Like we're all competing, but they're cheering me on as a brand new gun, PB2. And I shot a 904 that gunnery, which is, I was the second highest tank score for that gunnery. And I don't think I could have shot that without their mentorship and leadership. And then, so from Korea, I went back to Kentucky, and, you know, I had so many more leaders. Like, I just, everywhere I go, like, my platoon sergeant in Kentucky he was Black Puerto Rican, and great, great person, really intelligent, a lot of motivation. He was a Golden Glove boxer. I mean, he like put everything into being a leader. He taught me a lot. And so from Kentucky, I reenlisted because I became an NCO, and I reenlisted to go to Fort Hood. And Fort Hood is the largest military installation in the world. So you can imagine the diversity there. Mm-hmm. I went to a CAV unit. The leadership was a little different. I ended up with a white platoon sergeant who was a good old boy, and mm-hmm. I noticed some racist things from mm-hmm. him. And it's weird because the military, at least when I was in, you know, from Korea and Kentucky and stuff like that, if you were openly racist, if you said something openly racist, you were gonna, you know, there were consequences. You didn't just get to be racist in the military, at least not when I was in. You know, like, you can't be racist in the military and people can trust you. You know, like, you're fighting next to people, arm in arm. And if you are racist and you're, say your fellow NCO is a Black person and you're a racist white person, that Black person's not going to trust you. Hmm. And they shouldn't, because being racist basically tells that person that you deem them as a lower being. And you can't. Everybody has to be equal in the military. Like, same thing with females. Females in combat units need to be equal to males mm-hmm. in combat units. You can't see them as anything but equals. And in order, what was that?
No, I'm saying that's interesting. I'm sure that's a whole nother talk too, as far as doing in the military.
But so, and then I went to Fort Hood with the intention of deploying. Because as an NCO, you have to show that you have been through, you know, everything that puts you in that position. So mm-hmm. combat is part of that, especially me being a combat arms soldier. So when I deployed, you know, we served with Muslims, sheikhs, and, you know, we served alongside the Iraqi army and the Iraqi police force. So, you know, there's that other cultural aspect of extreme racism because of 9/11, you know, like mm-hmm. you have people who view Muslims as terrorists, and it's like, no, like, you know, not only are Muslims not just a Middle Eastern thing, like there's a lot of Black Muslims, there's a lot of Asian Muslims, you know, there's not very many white Muslims, but that doesn't, you know, that doesn't say that there isn't any. And like, what people don't realize is it's a religion, you know, like there are religiously run Muslim countries like Iraq, but it is not, being Muslim it's not synonymous with being a terrorist, just like being Black's not synonymous with being a criminal. You know, taking that, experiencing these things in the military, experiencing that, no, this my interpreter in the vehicle with me that was blown up when I was blown up, you know, he was right there with me. He was Muslim. And yeah, I can't have any harsh words for this guy because he went through the same stuff as me. And the first people on site when I was blown up were the Iraqi army. Mm. You know, it took the U.S. Army over 20 minutes to get to us. But the Iraqi army was there in like 5 minutes. So it's just like, and it's just those kinds of things, like those world experiences that you have, experiencing these other cultures, like there's, if people experience that, especially people, veterans who experience that and still choose to believe that, you know, white people are this, you know, better race. And it's like, no, dude, stop. You're a man, you know, that's a man, that's a woman. You know, like you're not supposed to view races that way. You were supposed to see what's going on between races and try to do something to fix it. But you don't oppress another man. You don't oppress another woman. And that is my biggest complaint against racism. It's like, you're just like this individual, except they're having issues because of our system.
And it's actually an interesting topic, you know, bringing up the military, because I have seen it kind of, in a sense, on both sides. So just saying pretty much veterans, period, that have been pretty much triggered by everything that's been going on. And as black veterans, as white veterans, kind of going against Black Lives Matter as well. You know, so it's kind of interesting to see, you know, I believe they're taking it as disrespecting the country. You know, have you been seeing that also too, James?
Yeah, you know, it started with Colin Kaepernick. You know, people were like, oh, he's disrespecting our troops. And my opinion on that has always been, no, he is doing one of the most American things you can do. He is protesting. America was built on protest. America was built on rioting. He was peacefully protesting. It's protected in our Constitution. He was doing what he should have done. And you know, so many people, you know, like talk so poorly about this guy. And he told people his standpoint from the start. It wasn't like he was just kneeling in protest of the troops. He was like, no, I am kneeling to protest police violence, overwhelming police violence on black people. And people just saw that as him being un-American. It's like, in my opinion, as a combat veteran, no, he was being American. He was doing the most American thing you can do.
He definitely was too. So, I mean, so even just with touching that right there, just the kneeling protest started in a sense, a whole wave of different things that we've seen. And I'm gonna let Ryan lead this one in too, because that pretty much started this right here. So Ryan, talk about this right here for the people. And before you talk about that, Ryan, I did want to read the one comment. I believe David Raphael B said, he says, I was a Sunni Muslim for years and I have blue eyes and blonde hair. So yes, Ryan, what's your take on this, man?
It's social media. I've always had this view on social media that social media is a gift that's given to everyone to have a voice. The problem is everyone's voice doesn't need to be heard. That's, social media has opened the door for so many people to say what they want to say from the comfort of their couches or in their hands. They can say whatever they want without thinking about the power that their words have on people or affect on people. Melvin, what I'm going to have you do is I'm going to have you show a couple pictures. If you could show the Morgan Freeman picture, please.
All right.
So this is Morgan Freeman's stance on racism. I don't want a Black History Month. Black history is American history. There is no White History Month. The only way to end racism is to stop talking about it. I've seen so many people use this meme and this picture as their defense, as if Morgan Freeman is the spokesman for Black America. Now, there's a couple factors I want to put into play. Morgan Freeman is a wealthy Black man. Morgan Freeman will not face the same tree as I'm going to face. Now, yes, Morgan Freeman is Black, and Morgan Freeman may be treated differently because of his skin color. But Morgan Freeman does not have to worry about being pulled over in a speeding violation or a taillight turn into a full out assault. Now, post the Rosa Parks pitch. Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat on the bus, but she didn't trash the bus. Big difference.
Wow.
Show the next picture, Melvin. And what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna show a trend. Poor children of every color pick cotton. Open a book and gain some knowledge. Next picture, Melvin.
Wow. This is a big one here.
What about these innocent lives? I can't breathe. Now, the scary part about these posts, with the exception of the white poor children pick cotton as well, all these other pictures were posted by the same exact person. Now, this person is a claiming Christian, someone that claims that they are a Christian. And your stance in this situation as a Christian should be, let's pray for this country. But instead, this person is using their voice and their social media to turn black oppression against us. To use Morgan Freeman and Rosa Parks and abortion against us in a time of need just shows how people don't tend to empathize with us as much as they say they do. Social media has turned into one of the ugliest places. And we were discussing this off the air. I had to take a break from Facebook. Facebook was a mess. And because Facebook gets so political. I can go to Twitter and Instagram and just look at different things, shoes, cars, just whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
But I can pick what I want to see on Instagram. On Facebook, it's hard to pick what you want to see on Facebook when the people that are saying it are people that you used to go to church with.
That's
what people that are saying it are people that used to be your teacher in school or used to go to school with, or the people that are saying it are your old coworkers or your current coworkers. When I have to deal with racism on a daily basis, just as a black man in America, but then I have to go on social media and see people that I call friends or see people that I'm close to post the same foolishness that I'm fighting against, now it makes me question, who is the fight truly against?
Mm-hmm.
2020 has been eye-opening, and it's shown me the people that are on my side and the people that aren't on my side. And a lot of it is just shown through the pure ignorance on social media. Melvin, you could touch on this more because I know you and I, we're in a group text and we talk about this stuff every day.
Man, it's insane. Like all the gaslighting, the racial gaslighting that is being done instead of actually addressing the issue. I was actually listening to another interview and they were talking to, I believe her name is D'Angela Stanton, I believe. She's running for Congress. And to make a long story short, Trump did help her out. She is a black woman. Trump helped her out, got her out of jail. She has an incredible story, but she is a Trump supporter. And, you know, she was kind of doing a lot of gaslighting when it came towards the issues of Trump and racism. Instead of, you know, because when they asked her about the Central Park Five, she said her response wasn't to that. It was to one of the dads in Central Park Five, like why we can't be mad at him instead of actually addressing the issues. So I'm kind of seeing that a lot that's going on with these people that are addressing the issues of social media. And as soon as we get to address the issues, they want to bring up something else and actually, you know, try to get the focus out of the whole entire situation. So another person that I have been seeing on social media, person that we went to school with, was posting pretty much, he said he was bold enough to post that, hey, I'm gonna just go flat out and say it, Black Lives Matters is the most racist organization in history. And then not like just that he wasn't, you know, he didn't just say it that bold, he actually also put boom in the comments, like he dropped the mic. And so it was a lot of people that were agreeing with him under the comments. And I had to pretty much come in there and says, now, please tell me, have you heard of the KKK? Now, if you heard of the KKK, like everybody that agreed, I said, everybody that agreed, let me know how Black Lives Matters is worse than the KKK. I then go on to show some lynchings that the KKK have done. But as soon as I went to go post that, he deleted the comment. Now he waited. Of course, he had a ton of different comments, but he waited. And also, it kind of did upset me too. Is yes, Joe. You know what I'm saying, Joe? He said upset it. They put him out. I mean, he said it, and it kind of made me upset too because somebody else that didn't agree, but that wasn't black, he was understanding the issues. he was saying, you know what, man, I'm not going to go back and forth with you. You can inbox me. But I had inboxed him and sent him those same messages, and he just pretty much left them on read. And it was like, yo, so you were bold enough to say, to speak on these issues, but when someone actually wants to start to talk to you about them and address them, then you kind of want to be quiet, because there's no way that you're going to convince me that Black Lives Matters is worse than the KKK, that is still, you know, underneath a lot of these issues that are kind of still going on. There's still people that are undercover, a part of the Black Lives, I mean, not sorry, that are part of the KKK. So yeah, Joel, he says he got some explaining to do with that at the 20-year reunion. He said, I'm not talking about anything. That's why David Hardy, he also, David said, I wasted my breath talking to him at that 10-year reunion. And man, and that makes me sad too, because I remember talking to him. He talked to me like, hey, what's going on, man? How you doing? And I'm like, yo, you know me personally, so why are you saying these different things? You really won't have any type of empathy to say, hey, okay, something must be going on that's different here. And again, his argument was, and like how you spoke earlier, that he was upset that about the statues. They are messing up American history. That's why I had to show the lynchings. I said, you're worried about statues when there's been Black bodies hanging in the trees. Like, that's a whole totally different thing. You're worrying about someone that who's been gone for almost centuries, and we've had Black bodies not too long ago. I mean, we're talking about 50, 70, 80 plus years with some people that are still have ancestors that are alive during this, you know?
There was 5 Black people hung in trees over a week ago.
Man.
But there's no possible way you can rule any of those as a suicide. If anybody is going to make a statement and they're going to take their lives, that statement's going to be heard loud and clear. They're not going to go out in a public place in the dead of night and kill themselves. They're going to do it in broad daylight with people there. If they want to make a statement, that's how they're going to do it. You can't rule 5 consecutive suicides, hangings, lynchings as suicide. You can't do that. Those were set up. Somebody killed those Black people.
And it alarmed me by seeing that, and then also how everything kind of came out early this week about those cops in North Carolina that got caught. And I talked about this on our live Thursday, but I just found out today too, because I seen the police chief statement. The police chief, because they caught these cops by listening to reviewing old footage or whatever, right? So the police chief that was speaking, it was Black. So you imagine how he felt. And what these 3 cops were saying over the air is, we can't wait to slaughter these niggers. Oh God, I just cannot wait to slaughter these niggers. So imagine being a Black police chief hearing that cops under you are planning to slaughter Black people. Like, and it literally just blew me away. And it's really blowing me away as far as everything that happened with George Floyd. You would think that you're seeing the cops that are quitting. You're seeing the cops that are supposedly taking a stand because they feel like they are being unjustly wrong. And you would think that the numbers and the incidents of police brutality, because there's a microscope, you would think it'd be kind of going down, but the numbers are actually still kind of rising. They're taking it as, again, a shot at their white supremacy. And that is what's bothering me, that's killing me, that they're taking it as, you know what? And that's what really kind of pissing me off too, is that people that are upset about Black Lives Matter because they want to say all lives matter, and they're trying to say it's that we're causing a divide, but also they're trying to say back the blue, which is causing the whole divide.
And then the funniest thing about the back the blue or Blue Lives Matter thing is when you argue with those people, their response is, yeah, but blue lives are under attack right now. It's like, that is the same argument. Yeah. You understand. You're right there. You're just toeing the line between racism and like using the same rhetoric. It's mind baffling to see that people
are using the Blue Lives Matter, and then they arguing for it the same way people are arguing for Black Lives Matter.
Their lives aren't at stake, though.
Blue lives aren't cops aren't dying. They're the ones doing the killing.
Shoot. And what was that fact that you brought up when we talked about in the last live as far as about the union? You know, they're worried about their jobs, but they have this union that's pretty much kind of protecting. What was that you said about there, especially with Chauvin? If anything happens with Chauvin, I believe you said.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So the crazy thing about that case, even if the man that killed George Floyd was convicted of murder and was sentenced to life in prison, his pension is worth over $1 million that the city of Minneapolis has to pay. Mm-hmm. I can kill someone on camera that's released to the world that causes worldwide protest and still get paid for it. And that's scary that you can even say something like that, because it sounds like it's something out of a movie. Like, oh, that's impossible. Nothing like that is going to work. But these laws are set up. These unions are set up to work for them. And just to add to what you guys were saying as far as Blue Lives, let's not get it misconstrued. All of us do support law enforcement. All of us do back the blue. I can be a Black man in America and still back the blue, but tell you that my life matters. Someone had made a meme and said, I've never heard somebody write a song called F the Firefighters.
Man. It's because they do their job.
Could you imagine if a firefighter decided not to put out someone's house because they were Black, the outrage that would happen? Could you imagine? And it's almost like we don't give praise. Like when you say, oh, all lives matter. Yeah, but all professions matter. We don't highlight the doctors. We don't highlight the EMTs. We don't highlight the firemen. We just highlight the officers, and we say, because their lives are at risk too. That's the same exact thing we're saying. So just to piggyback what y'all said, you can't use our argument against us,
man,
to help push your ignorance.
It kills me.
I blame your Candace Owens though. I'm gonna go ahead and let James go, because I'm about to hit this Candace Owens wave real hard. Go ahead, James.
I just wanted to touch on that police officer that is getting his pension. So there was a female police officer who stopped another officer from doing an illegal act, and she lost her pension.
Yep.
She lost her job and lost her pension. They're only now working on trying to reinstate it.
Years ago. You're exactly right.
Yep.
But this murderer is going to keep his, but a good cop.
And I believe
upholding the law lost hers.
Isn't that lady, didn't she pretty much lose her job because she spoke out on one of her police officers pretty much kind of doing almost a similar, like a legal chokehold or whatever on someone?
Yeah.
Didn't that happen?
She stopped him from doing the legal chokehold.
That's crazy. Oh my goodness. Rafael David Beeson, he says, James already pointed this out, but it's worth repeating. Most of those statues were put up during the civil rights era by groups like the Daughters of the Confederacy. Akeisha Brown Braxton, she says, good point, Ryan. David Hardy, he also says, that's what's upsetting. People can't continue to act as if they aren't happening. Once you admit to the numerous examples of injustice, then we can begin to think about having a civil conversation. Nothing says peace like wanting some understanding. That's all most people want. And that's what kind of killed me, even with and I wish I would have put it together to post with Rudolph Giuliani. Oh my God. Oh,
he's a mess.
Oh my gosh. Like, he really riled so many people up with that tweet, man. Do I have it available to read really fast? Cause it was like, it was a mess. Bold, very bold what he said.
But while you're looking for that tweet, I'm gonna talk about I kind of already know when we talk about racism on social media and the things that people are saying, I already know where it comes from. The reason why racism still exists in America and why it's still being discussed is because racism isn't unpopular right now. Racism isn't something that makes you uncomfortable when you're racist. I can call somebody the N-word. I can be a white man, call somebody the N-word and not get called out for it. My friends don't say, hey, that's not cool. people are still allowing these racist things to be said and done with no remorse or penalties. If you're comfortable posting a baby that's been aborted on social media without the conscience that my friends may not want to see something like this on my social media, and no one stops you or comments to you, you're going to keep doing stuff like that. And I already know when they use black on black crime, when they use different things like this, you have people like Candace Owens and the Hodge twins come out here on these platforms and speak out on things as if they represent the black community. And then all it does is it just adds ammunition to the people that are trying to counter what we're trying to get in this country. To say black on black crime, and you know, I think we've all seen it all. There's white on white crime. Crime is crime. You know what's truly sad about it? To sit here and say that I have to demand respect from my own race first before I ask for respect from a different race. Like, I actually saw a black person post this, and it was it's a black Republican. Mm-hmm. He posted this, and I'm thinking, like, bruh, so you're mean to tell me that you're okay with being disrespected because blacks don't respect each other? I have problems with that, because now what you're saying is, oh, well, guys, you know what? I do see that there's an issue that needs to be fixed, but I can't do anything on my end until you fill out the paperwork. You got to fill out the paperwork and submit the report. That's what I'm saying. Instead of you using your power to step in and say, this isn't right, I'm going to fix it, you have to request it through doing A, B, and C. And social media, I hate that. And that's why I'm going to ask you to play this video, Melvin. Okay. With social media, I hate that. Here it is. We're all on live. And Melvin, I know Google is your best friend. I literally just saw James pick up his phone to give actual facts instead of just throwing numbers out there. We're all fact checkers. People are sitting here saying Black Lives Matter. I'm actually going to go live with somebody. It's a black man that I went to church with. I'm going to go live with somebody next week about this, because he feels that Black Lives Matter is a threat, is a problem. And he compares it to a hate group. And I think it's people, when you're getting your news from Facebook and you're sticking with that information instead of actually picking up your phone, looking up things, fact checking. I mean, I thank God that Instagram and Facebook started deleting posts because they didn't have the actual facts right. And they'll tell you at the bottom that, nah, this ain't correct, because so many people are spreading stuff. And then you're running with the narrative that, oh, well, if I wear a mask, it goes against my Second Amendment. I can't carry my gun. And no, that's not true. You can look it up. And every state has come out and said, guys, this does not apply. You can still wear your mask and carry concealed carry. But you put one meme out there and people run with it. And now you have an agenda floating around that COVID is a tactic to take away our rights. Social media is so... it can be positive, but it could be terrible and negative at the same time. Go ahead, James.
That dude, the only country in the world where a global pandemic became a political issue is the United States.
It's here.
Yeah. Everywhere else are handling it like a global pandemic. Here in the United States, they're like, no mask, I'm not gonna wear a mask because I can't breathe and carbon dioxide. It's like, no, doctors wear masks for 24 hours plus to give you surgery to save your life. They don't complain.
And James, who's still affected by COVID right now to this day? At high
predominantly
numbers?
Black people.
That's the thing. It's almost like, hey, well, you know, it ain't really killing us, so we're going to go out here and do what the hell we want to do. We don't look at COVID as a threat because who it's attacking. I remember when COVID first came out, blacks were excited because we were like, oh, man, we can't get COVID because the numbers weren't really coming up for us. But at that same time, a lot of white people were concerned. Oh, my goodness, what does this mean? Mm-hmm. But as soon as those numbers started going up and then you started seeing the population that was affected, you started seeing people like, oh, hey, open up our hair salons. Well, you didn't want your hair salon open a month ago when you thought you could die from it. But now, since you're seeing it's killing our population more, it's not a threat to you anymore. Now it's a political divide. And it's just like Black Lives Matter, how they say Black Lives Matter donates money to these organizations. No one is fact checking. And that's the scary part about society today and social media. people can say what they want to say with no repercussions from what they're doing and saying. And it's hate speech. It's spreading hate. It's bad because Black Lives Matter isn't just an organization. If Black Lives was a company and you came out with a organization called Black Lives Matter, they're representing a company. Mm-hmm. Black lives are actual living people. To say Black Lives Matter does not mean you're representing any type of agenda. You're literally saying that Black human beings matter in this world, in this country. And for someone to counter it and say that Black Lives Matter is worse than the Klan, where we have an entire
worse than history,
an entire group that's focused on destroying other races that don't look like them. Like, hell, let's take this, for example, the Berlin Wall. They took down the Berlin Wall because what it represented. It represented division, and it wasn't something that represented unity in their country. Hell, David Hasselhoff went over there and sung his heart out on top of the wall as they tore it down. America steps in and intervenes in other country situations. When are we going to intervene in our situations and our issues and our problems? Mm. The swastika was used as a symbol of hate, but it's a Japanese symbol.
It is a native. If you look up the history of the swastika, Native Americans.
Yes. Yes.
Japanese Buddhists. It is the origin of. It's not called the swastika and those other uses. Mm-hmm. The origin is very historic. I mean, like centuries older than most written history. It's a symbol for peace and unity in most places, and harmony and within native cultures and stuff like that. You still see it on native jewelry and stuff like that today. Mm-hmm. And so it's very along the lines of somebody taking a symbol that means something to somebody,
yeah,
and completely destroying that meaning.
Mm-hmm. Man, it's insane too, just to even hear how you can take something so good and then flip it around with all the media. And that's just how dangerous the rhetoric too, that people were saying, even with Black Lives Matter, because like you say, to the person that you're going to go live with pretty much, and how people on social media are spewing this rhetoric out. Candace Owens, I didn't even know about the Hodge twins doing all this stuff too. But again, I did find that what Rudolph Giuliani said, and the guy, he might agree to this, but he said in all caps, "Wake up." He said, "Black Lives Matters wants to destroy law enforcement in bail, says they want to empty the prisons, including drug dealers, as well as users, provide themselves with reparations and a full," he said, "and," he put in all caps too, "and a full-time government income without the necessity of work." I'm like, dude, are you serious? You know how people, that can rile people up so much? And
I didn't see that on no mission statements on Black Lives Matter.
Man, and you know what's so crazy is too, and I think this kind of goes with a clip too that you probably want to play, Ryan, too, as far as people are being upset with looting, they're being upset with statues being down. But if they even look at the history of KKK, if they look at the history of racism and everything that's been done to our people, and they imagine if we actually started killing people, could they imagine if we actually really started to wanted to enact revenge, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to play that video of somebody else talking about the same instance.
How come nobody ever talks about how much black people don't riot? You know? I mean, all the shit they put up with every day for generations and without rioting. Meanwhile, if a bunch of white people's hockey team loses, they burn it all down. I mean, black people catch all the shit for rioting, but really, given the circumstances, they almost never do it, you know? But you can only push the people so far, and apparently they draw the line at wanton public murder at the hands of the law. And I, for one, am not going to criticize that, okay? I don't care about the looting or the methodology or any of that shit. As far as I'm concerned, the blame for the situation in Minneapolis belongs solely to the Minneapolis police. Put simply, if you don't want your town ripped apart by riots, then, to paraphrase 90s Jim Carrey, stop murdering people, assholes.
Yeah, that's real. And again, I want to read Shelly's comment too. I believe she was agreeing with me what I said earlier. I believe she said she tried to stop a fellow officer from performing a similar act like the George Floyd incident and got fired for it, lost her pension, is now working as a trucker to support her family. And that is a terrible thing. Drew said, what's up? So yeah, so really with that being said too, it's crazy when you really think about it. If like y'all are upset about statues and all the stuff that has been done to, and we can go back. I mean, people talk about the Achimama character, you know, people not understanding, because that was a whole gaslighting issue again. You know, people say, oh, that was a real person. It made a good living, but they don't understand that the person, the owner from Quaker Oats, he got it from watching a minstrel show, which was pretty much what white people would dress up as blackface, you know, as entertainment. And it's been a lot of things that's been done to us as entertainment, you know, as far as even the Mandingos putting two of the strongest black men together to fight, beat themselves up. I'm just finding out, I knew about, unfortunately, with the crocodile bait, people throwing in black babies into the water to be eaten. I'm just hearing about them using black babies in a fair. You know, they would pretty much, you know, they would go to church and then come to the fair where they would make sure these black babies get breastfed first. So when they hit the babies with a baseball and dunk them, they would make sure they would spew out milk out of their mouth. I mean, it was so many different things that were done. It's insane, but they're worried about us looting stores that have insurance and tearing down statues. So racism and social media, man. I'm not sure if we played. Did we play another clip too? Was there another clip or another picture that you wanted to also share too, Ryan? I think he was talking about as far as maybe, I think this might go into what we can do maybe to move forward. So let's get into that, because I think one of the clips you was talking about as far as what can we do to move forward, and y'all could also comment as well as what do y'all think we can do to move forward in these steps. But I believe this was the
I want to touch on that video clip real quick, and it kind of plays along with social media.
Okay.
You see a lot of people quoting Martin Luther King. You know, like he's quoted a lot saying peaceful protest, you know, like people should protest peacefully. Mm-hmm. And then you also see the return of people posting about him saying rioting is the voice of those unheard. And that's what happened. You know, like,
yeah,
literally somebody got murdered on camera in the streets, and you know, they started peaceful protesting. The police officers were not listening. The political officials were not listening. The United States was not listening. So they rioted. In my opinions, the rioting did not start with Black Lives Matter. It did not start with protesters. It started with organized instigators. There's video clips. You can see it.
James, there's a video about to come up right now. Go ahead.
Yeah, here we go.
Live, and I'll tell you right now, what's happened in Beverly Hills is not Black Lives Matters. It's not. I've been walking with Black Lives Matters for like the past 3 hours. They've been peaceful, they've been graceful, and they've been kind. And these people came out of nowhere just now, like literally just now, from nowhere. They have been walking with Black Lives Matters. Nobody in the entire crew has had baseball bats. Nobody. I've taken pictures of all of them. Nobody had any weapons. Nothing. So these people are starting a riot because they're inciting people. Straight up. Look at them. They're inciting people. These aren't Black Lives Matters. These are paid protesters. So, and interestingly enough, CBS News was here earlier than they needed to. Oh my gosh, what was CBS doing here right before these people showed up at the exact spot they were supposed to be there? That's so weird. I don't understand. So let's go see what these people who are not Black Lives Matters, I don't know who they are. Let's go see who they are and let's go see why they're here. So please share this. We're here.
Very interesting. And it's so interesting to see that clip, but then also hear the debate about people saying about how the media is trying to do, they don't like how the media is doing certain things, but then they're also agreeing with the media as far as that Black Lives Matter is dangerous. That's been like one of the biggest gaslighting techniques used, is the fact that they want to use the media when it's convenient for them. They want to say the media is making us be oversensitive about the things that's happening, but they want to also be upset when the media talks about Black Lives. It's insane how much gaslighting is being done. But that's crazy that you mentioned that too, because you know Ryan, you know, submitted that too, and we didn't even get to talk about that. And it's true. Like, a lot of things that have been going on have been other people inciting these riots. Mm-hmm. Man. So how do y'all feel like, what steps can we take towards moving forward? And I think there was a George Floyd police reform that was just agreed on, I think either yesterday. I'm not sure about all the details. Y'all might know. If you do know more, y'all can comment on it. But how do y'all feel like things should be taken towards moving forward?
James, I'll let you take it first.
Okay. My opinion, police reform and defunding. So when I say defunding, I don't mean abolishment of police. Okay. I mean the demilitarization of police. There's no we have a military. We have Air Force. We have the Army. We have the Marines. We have National Guard. Hell, we even have Coast Guard. We have the Navy. We have the military. We don't need military at our homes. We don't need military on our streets. So we need to defund. That's one step. Defund, reform. And when I say reform, I mean retraining, re-education, longer education, more extenuating understanding of the laws that they're supposed to govern. And then they need to be held accountable the same way that the military is held accountable. You can't have people who are supposed to protect people shoot people. You don't reach straight for your sidearm. People are always being compliant until you start reaching for your sidearm. If somebody's pointing a gun at you, yeah, grab your gun, point it back. But in the military, if I pulled my gun and I shot at somebody who was not shooting at me first, I'd be in military prison to this day. It's an escalation of force. It's show, shout, disable, shoot. You show a force, okay? Block it.
It was just crazy because you learn that as a civilian too. Because I learned that with my gun class, as far as lethal force. Like if I pull out my gun, that's an example and point it. That's an example of lethal force, even if I don't shoot it. Yeah. Like that's crazy that the cops know that, but still they do that. And to me, it almost kind of seems that they want to be on the same level as the military, but without the training.
Mm-hmm.
Like for real, like
which makes no sense because
they look at themselves as having that same power, mm-hmm. but they actually, you know, don't have that same power. Like I think I was talking about it on another live. It's kind of like martial arts in a sense. Like for the person that doesn't have intelligence in the martial arts field, they just want to look at it as being learning the arts to whoop ass. You know what I'm saying? But they don't until they meet a real martial artist and learn it's more about control and actually it's not about, you know, hurting someone, you know what I mean? And abusing that power. But mm-hmm. it's interesting how they learn these tactics, but they don't follow those same principles as the military does though.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good thing that you said, reforming them, actually learning, you know, different things and putting the funding into the police. You're right. We have the National Guard here. You know, we have other different places that we can put the funding. And also, again, it doesn't mean less police, but the funding that they're getting is insane, right? Like
how do we justify the defunding of education and the overfunding of police? Education is the biggest thing to stop crime. It's been proven around the world.
It's cause and effect.
Yeah, you educate your populace, you give them the opportunity to succeed in life, you give them the opportunity to even in impoverished places come up with an education that can give them a job to pull themselves out of poverty. But we don't allow that in the United States because it's a capitalist society where we thrive because of the poverty. We use people who have little education and pay them little money for expensive labor.
I agree 100% with everything James said. And me being a black man in America, one thing I will never do, I will never be ignorant to the problems and the issues. I do think one of the things that we can do moving forward is, yes, we do need to educate our own community. And mm-hmm. and when I say educate our own community, I do think it's important that we invest more into our young generation, our youth, as far as teaching them financial wealth, teaching them like how to even, because I remember growing up learning how to balance a checkbook. Those same customs and things that I learned coming up aren't taught today as far as how to budget and how to look at the stock market, different things, real estate. If you don't teach people how to gain wealth and how to gain financial stability, how can you expect them to have it? If you don't teach, period, how can you expect people to have the knowledge and the education to not make bad decisions out in the real world? So, yes, I believe that the fight does start with our community. But the big but, as James said, the funding, when we say defund the police, I don't mean take money out of the police officers' pockets. Whatever a police officer gets paid, they probably should get paid more. I'll just be honest, because that is a dangerous job. You're out there protecting and serving, but that's if you're doing your job. Hmm. We can't pay people to literally go out there and have 71 infractions on their record. And then the 72nd one is the one that kills a man in broad daylight. We can't have that in this world, in this country, and think it's okay. So when we say defund the police, when people say it's an issue with police, we're not saying that police officers are terrible. We're not saying that we don't want police officers. We're saying, and I hate even using the good cop, bad cop, because if you think about the narrative, when you watch a movie and they do that good cop, bad cop, majority of the time, the bad cop always does something illegal. Mm. The bad cop comes in there and misuses his authority, goes in, beats the mess out of the person that they're interrogating, and then the good cop comes in. Hey, how you doing, buddy? The issue with that is we see it on TV and we're like, hey, that's how you get things done, not realizing that good cop literally just sat there and watched the other cop beat the brakes off somebody. There's no such thing as a good cop, bad cop. That's one profession you can't be bad at. You're either a cop or you're a trash person in a uniform. And we need to start making sure that we enforce that the people that are wearing those uniforms are actually doing their jobs. I view cops as a high regarded position, just like I view our military. That's a job that I know is a lot on a family member. I know it's a lot on a mental state. I know that these jobs take up a lot of mental capacity. So those jobs and those positions should be respected. But at the same time, if you have a soldier that is in uniform and he's misrepresenting that flag that he wears on his uniform, what do you do? Like James said, if you pull a gun out and the person that you're shooting at or holding your gun towards doesn't have a weapon, they'll put you in military prison. I feel like the biggest issue is people aren't willing to say, oh, I think that George Floyd, that death was terrible and he should be sentenced. But we should also go out and make sure that this doesn't happen again. Mm. No one is saying that. No one is saying we have to stop this from happening. We're just going case by case. Someone has to die first. And then you say, oh, yes, this person should be locked up. And that can't be the narrative anymore. We have to start addressing these things before they even happen. We have to start putting police officers in the community as community leaders. We have to put our law enforcement in a community. So when there's a Martin Luther King Day parade or there's a Martin Luther King Day function in the center, put the law enforcement in there and let them interact with the youth. Let them interact with the community, because if the community is comfortable with law enforcement, you don't have to worry about feeling threatened when you pull somebody over for a taillight, because I know this community. I know these people. The issue that we have, especially in like Leesville, thank God that we don't have cases like this that hit national news. But the issue is you have law enforcement that live in small towns and rural areas where there is no black population. And then you expect them to come in and drive to the heart of the ghetto in Leesville and patrol. You can't do that, because instantly when I see you, you are a threat, because I don't know anything about you. I don't know that your do-rag is for your waves. I don't know that all the kids are wearing jerseys again and throwbacks. That when I watched the movie, that stereotypical drug dealer that wore the do-rag and a jersey, that's not the case. It's a culture thing. I don't know these things because that's not my culture. That's not my community. And that's the only way I feel like the relationship between law enforcement and the public is going to get better, because it's not just blacks. Let's keep this honest. They are going after blacks and the poor. Mm-hmm. And the poor, white, Hispanics, and any other nationality that falls underneath that poverty level, those are the people that they are attacking. I'm sitting here watching videos of white women and Hispanic men, just different races, getting choked out. And I'm like, but that's an illegal move. And then people say, well, Black Lives Matter isn't protesting, but you should. You should be outraged. And that's when you get your All Lives Matter sign out and you hit those streets and protest. Black Lives Matter is only speaking out because we started realizing that there was a trend of people going to trial and then getting off, getting acquitted. So that's how Black Lives Matter developed. When Trayvon Martin's George Zimmerman got off, that was when it developed. So when you say, I don't see Black Lives Matter protesting when other black people kill each other, then you should. You should get your sign and go out there and say, Black Lives Matter. What about you guys killing each other? Because if it's outraging you that much, then you should come out and do the same thing we're doing. You should go out and protest. It's funny because this, like my shirt, for example, no one can be at peace unless they have their freedom. Every race should be upset when they see a black person, a white person, a transgender person, or any other person in America be killed or treated in an unjust way. That should be something that outrages our entire country. So until we get to the place where everyone is outraged by everything that happens in this country, we can't move forward. That's something that has to start in a home, and it has to start with holding our friends and our loved ones accountable. We have to start calling those things out. We have to start saying, hey, I need you to keep that same energy. Because I'll be honest, when ICE goes through and does the raids and they lock up these parents, I'm on the front line saying this isn't right, because I see what's being done to these families. Mm-hmm. I'm not just speaking out on things that apply to black people. I speak out on, I myself personally, I'm not a homosexual, but that doesn't mean I can't support homosexuals. Even if I'm coming from a Christian background and the views in a Christian background are different about homosexuality, that doesn't mean I can't support a person that I care about, because their rights matter too. We've gone to school with people, or we've worked with people, or we know people that are homosexual or that are different nationalities, and their issues matter to us just as much. So whenever the entire country can get on board that these issues bother them just as much as it does when it impacts them, that's when we can move forward.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to read some of these comments too, kind of some new ones. So Dash Corey, he says, generational wealth is something we learn on our own in our community, because a lot of us are just now are the first of our families. And I was actually, it was another man. I got to listen to this John Stewart. John Stewart did a good interview with the Breakfast Club, but he was actually talking again something about the military, as far as how a lot of the blacks in the military, like originally in the past, how they had pretty much, because he was pretty much, they was asking the question too, also as far as what can we do to change. And he was pretty much saying, you know, as far as us demanding a form of equity. So he was really saying that how some of the soldiers that were getting out of the military was, they had, and he named the law and everything like that too, so y'all can definitely look it up, but how they had an opportunity in order to get this certain loan, but it was interesting that the black soldiers, even though they had the same merits, they had the same rights, they had the same time in the military, they didn't get the same access to this actual loan, which pretty much kind of started help with them getting that equity for that generational wealth. He also says, I believe that police officers should be from the community they are policing. He also said, too, that he says, see, the issue black-on-black violence is being protested, but it's not being televised or publicized by the media. That's also an issue with this country. Media is driving the divide. And again,
it's crazy. Like, if you look at statistics, I know, Melvin, you and I talked about this a couple weeks ago. So statistics can be manipulated, and what you're getting is the black on black crime is a higher statistic because there are more black arrests. It's not because it's a higher number of crime from black people and black people. You don't see anything in the news about black people committing mass shootings because it's predominantly white people. School shootings, predominantly white people. You don't hear that as a rhetoric. You don't hear that as a tool to be used for their defense of these laws or their defense of the police officers. Yeah. Black on black crimes are a statistic that they're using as a tool because more black people are being arrested on higher levels than that of white people.
Very true. Very true. And that has been another form of gaslighting as well, too. What about black on black? Y'all are killing each other, you know, and that's a whole other issue. And people don't really not understand it, the whole thing about systemic racism, too, as far as everything that, you know, that we had to go through with them, you know, dropping drugs into the neighborhoods, as far as even putting us in, you know, the neighborhoods, the poorest neighborhoods. So it goes so much further back. And I believe, I guess, one of the things also to add to everything that y'all said, too, of course, we cannot forget about voting, being there and learning about the laws and about the issues and pretty much using the power, you know, as far as starting on the local level. And then also with that, making sure that we are united, because unfortunately, too, you know, we have that some of the people that we might vote for, we might think they might be for us for the issues, but then they might be also, unfortunately, trying to win the other side. And I kind of feel like that's a little bit of a play that Candace Owens and some of the others that are speaking out, you know, they are trying to pretty much win that other side and say, hey, you know what, we're for y'all. So, man, is there anything else that y'all wanted to add to?
So with the whole political thing, you saw that with vote blue no matter who. They were using that as rhetoric to push out Bernie, you know, because Bernie's not a Democratic. He's an independent running on a Democratic platform because it's the one that closest aligns to his platform. But Democrats do not want Bernie in office because he will change things. That's what he wanted to do. He does not want Democrats running the government the way they have been. I mean, we have Biden, who's running for presidency right now, who is the one who created most of these laws protecting police officers when they commit heinous crimes against citizens. That most of those laws were written and signed over by Biden. So we have right now in an election, we have Trump, who we know is racist, who's out. You can't deny that. And if you deny it, more than likely you're racist too. And then we have Biden, who is protecting police in a system that these police are killing people and have an immunity for it. You know, neither one of these people, in my opinion, are good candidates. When you see two people elected in an election for the highest authoritative position in the United States, and both of them have allegations of rape and stuff like that against them, then we failed as a country. And that's not only there we're failing as a country in our racism, and we need to fix that. And that there's so many people that don't want that change that we need today.
And man, I'm gonna add to what James said, and I won't take long. It's important that he just touched that. If you look at our politics and even our candidates right now, Donald Trump was never a Republican before he actually became the president. I think there's footage of him saying that he would, if he was to run, he was run as a Republican, is because of their mindset, and he'd know he would be a guaranteed win. So you have a Republican president who's not actually a Republican. Then you have Joe Biden, who's running as a Democrat candidate, who's actually hurt our community more than he's helped it. I don't know when it's going to take, what it's going to take, but America needs to sit up and say, are these parties even actually for us?
Man.
I mean, man. I've sat here and I've looked at the Republican Party say, you have nothing to lose if you're Black, you may as well vote for us. But then I've sat here and watched Democrats say that Bill Clinton is the first Black president, which I don't know what the hell that means, because he put more Black people in jail than he saved and helped. So
being distracted by the
being distracted by the because wrong. Just because I hang out with Beyonce or I hang out with a celebrity doesn't make me for the people. And we have to stop allowing these political parties to divide us. Racism is only an issue because our politicians and our political candidates aren't making it a highlight in this country to eliminate. Because that's not an issue for them. We sit here and we talk about Jeffrey Epstein as if, oh my goodness, Hillary, we need to read these emails. As if Jeffrey and Donald Trump weren't close friends. As if Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton weren't close friends before he ran. These people.
Great guy. He said he's a great guy. He likes
exactly.
Young he's a great guy. He said that himself.
All of these people are in cahoots with each other. And you look at the stimulus packages. We got a $1,200 check, but these big businesses benefited from them. Well, who's over these big businesses? If you're going to do some homework, the assignment for today is to look up ALEC, A-L-E-C. Look up that organization and see how much control they have over bills that are passed and how much political pull they have. And we're talking about organizations like Wendy's and McDonald's. Walmart used to be a part of this. And what that means is after Trayvon Martin was gunned down, gun sales had went through the roof. Well, Walmart benefited from it because they're a part of this organization called ALEC that pushed a bill about gun laws. So if you sit back and do the homework, these politicians are profiting off of our bodies and off of our lives. And we have to stop that. Black Lives Matter right now, everything that's going on, these protests, don't sit here and act like, oh, the media, they're dividing us. The media does that. They don't want no. Your politicians are the ones that are sitting back smiling because they know come November, these people are going to vote and we can still control and have power, because all I have to say is, oh, I'll fix racism. And now I get in that office. We have to stop letting our politicians control us. It's important to go out and vote. There's a third party candidate. I don't want to mess up her name, but it's Joe Jorgensen, I believe. Do your research. Yes, Libertarian Party, do some research. There is a third option. James, you probably going to get deleted from Facebook by a lot of people, and so will I. Bernie was my guy. Bernie was a little delusional with some of the stuff he wanted, but I liked the vision that he had for the country. And I don't believe any candidate has a vision for our country and for the American citizens. If you are a president and you can't say Black Lives Matter, that's a problem. If you are a president and you can't say illegal immigration is against the law, but we need to come up with ways to legalize these people if they decide to come over. Like, if you can't use your words carefully to reach your citizens, then that's a problem. And we have so many candidates that come in here and they only view us as numbers. And until that stops, we will be divided. Racism is just a little small thing piece that they keep using to keep the division and to keep the power. As you see, a lot of people aren't liking these protests where you have white, Blacks, Hispanics, and Asians out here saying, we're tired of police brutality. We're tired of this. We're tired of that. We're going to overthrow the system. They don't want that. They don't like that. And I know I sound like a conspiracy theorist now, but it's facts. You can look in the books. You can read it online. These parties, they don't want this for us. There's a reason why blacks originated originally Republicans and then switched over to the Democratic Party. There's a reason why. There's a reason why we keep going back and forth through parties, is because these parties have changed. And it's got to the point now that they're so similar that you can't even tell the difference. You have one president that's one party that's typically against certain things. But then you have a president that comes in and doesn't even touch those things. Like it's becoming now, it's a joke, and they're making a mockery of us. And even if you'll just sit up and just look at the bill hearings when they push bills and just listen to the stuff people say, like they don't really care about our opinions. They don't care about how we feel about things. They don't care about our lives. It's really, how can I keep my job? How can I stay in a seat? How can I keep cushion in my pocket? Just use your own minds. I can't tell you who to vote for. If you vote for Republican, I can't be mad at you. If you like Trump, I'm not mad at you. But don't vote for Trump just because it's hot. Don't vote for Trump just because you liked watching The Apprentice. Vote because you feel like he's going to make a difference. He's going to make a change, not only for just your life, but for your brother and your neighbors. That's it.
Yeah.
And he also said, Bernie Age, he said he got him this year. He said he made the most sense for everything, but his health was in question. I don't know, because all the candidates are pretty old, though. That's one thing we kind of did talk about a little bit, too. The candidates are very old. And, but he's died. Also said, fact shames is Biden is the face of mass incarceration of black, browns, and poor whites. He didn't believe in integration. He believed all blacks belonged in cages. He also says, I agree with you all. There has to be a third party that is really for the people. He also says, I have been saying this for forever. It's not Black Lives Matter. It's Black Lives Marketing. And he also says it's a shame we have almost 400 million people in this country, and we are limited to these candidates for office. That is a horrible shame. So it's a lot of different work that we have to do. James, what you about to say is something else again too before we close?
So yeah, I mean, the one thing I want to add, we currently do have a two-party system. There's no looking around that. You know, if a Republican doesn't make it into office, they're going to make sure a Democrat does, and vice versa. But we have one of the most unprecedented things happening this election year with the Libertarian Party. I'm not saying vote Libertarian just because it's Libertarian, but having a third party with some say, with some pull, will influence in a positive way the way our government runs from now on, because now they have to fight. They actually, all three, have to fight to have good candidates, because if you have one party with a good candidate, they're going to win every time. Mm-hmm. And JoJo, she's not getting enough light. Some of the policies that she's talked about are good policies. Obviously, you're never going to agree with everything that a politician is going to bring to light. But
yeah.
I feel like she's the most in the middle of the candidates. And so I do see a benefit at electing or voting for a third party. If you're on the fence about it, I'm not saying vote Republican, vote Democrat, or vote Independent. I'm saying if you're on the fence, if you don't want to vote Democrat or Republican, there's a third option, and your vote matters no matter how you use it. As long as you're voting, it matters. If that third party gets so many votes, that means that they have more power. They have more candidates that can be in seats in these offices.
That power to the third party, what you're saying too.
Yeah.
That is a good way, because it's like we almost innately think that we can only vote either Democrat or Republican.
Exactly.
Well, that's what they say. You know, like the argument is, oh, you know, they're never going to win. It's like, yeah, you're right. You know, she may not win. You know, there's a high likelihood that she's not going to win. However, if everybody who's planning to vote her and didn't have their vote swayed by a Democratic or Republican, that means that party would have more power because they have this many votes. If they get a percentage of the votes, an actual percentage, then that party is allowed seats in the House, the Senate, and everything.
See, I didn't even know that, James. So that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Man, shoot. So if anybody else has anything to add to? Man, that was awesome, man. James, let everybody know where they can follow you, man.
Oh, you can look me up on Facebook, but I'm mainly on Instagram, American_Wastelander. It's my business page. I'm a bladesmith. You can follow me. I post a lot of political stuff on both, mainly in support of Black Lives Matter. And we talked about it earlier. We never really talked about, so when we say Black Lives Matter, we say they matter also. It's not that all lives don't matter. Black Lives Matter means that Black people are being killed by police officers and by our system, and it's not okay.
That's true. That's very true. That's a good point. So y'all definitely make sure y'all follow to it. Also, Ryan J, where can they follow you, man?
You can follow me on Instagram at Illuminati, which is UHHLUMI, Naughty, NAUGHTY. Also, the Business is Business podcast is now on Instagram. You can find me, the BIB podcast. You can follow me on Facebook, the Business is Business podcast, groundformore.com. So many places you can find me. But just my platform now is going to be about educating. I had a lot of stuff planned this year, but what's going on right now, these are the more important things to cover. So my platform will be used to actually educate, and I want to learn some things myself. Like James just said something about voting for a third party. I had no idea about. So that's something important that I want to go and research. So that's where you can find me. And hey, let's make America great again. That's the plan.
Man, that's real. And actually making it great. Let's just make it great. Because it
has not again. Yeah, it's never been great.
Hasn't been great, but let's make it great. You know, and I really like that you did point out as far as, you know, continuing the education, because there's still so many things that I don't know. It's still so many things to learn. I know, she was a celebrity, but Missy Elliott, she said, I can't lie, I've been enjoying this time because I've been learning more things that I didn't know. She said she didn't know anything about Black Wall Street. So it's good to have, it's good to be able to kind of pull back and see, okay, what do we need to learn from our past? And also, what do we need to learn as far as in the present with these laws and what we can do to kind of change that past that we're dealing with? So, man, I appreciate y'all. This has been a dope collaboration. Again, so you can follow me at Malvin9K everywhere, and also follow me at the Power Level Podcast. Man, I thank y'all again, and hopefully y'all share this. We'll be doing more broadcasts again in the future, and y'all have a great and safe day. I get better. That's just what happens when you grind for more. Nice guy, boy, you look like you got cheddar. That's just what happens when you grind for more. Well, you see, got a million miles on my feet, and I'm starving, man, I'm hungry. I just act like I won't eat. You know it. Nice guy, boy, you look like you a winner. You're right. 'Cause that's what happens when you grind for more. I put up my money on my brothers, not a problem. And they'll put up the same money for me, then ain't a problem. But if you want it.